Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
You know, the truth is, it felt exciting. Now, I will say everything felt like it was moving in slow motion. The guy who was representing me on a possible book publishing deal, he calls and he says, look, these publishers are chomping at the bit. We've got to meet with them right away. I said, well, okay, how about tomorrow? So, no, it's going to take 2 weeks to set it up. And I had to explain to him, I said, well, where I'm coming from right away means if we don't do something in half an hour, somebody dies.
There you go. That's a clip for my next guest. Needs no introduction. Season one is streaming now on Netflix. James Dempsey joins us once again. Good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon.
As I understand it, this is a show where David Letterman dresses as a homeless rabbi and interviews famous people.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. It kind of, to be honest with you, it really strikes me as like, it's like a televised podcast. Really, this is kind of what this is because, right, you know, everyone knows who David Letterman is, even if I don't think I ever saw a single full episode of his 30 years as a late night talk show host on various American chat shows. So he retired, I think, in 2015 and Stephen Colbert took over from him. And he's gone into the wilderness where he's been growing this very impressive, bushy lumberjack beard and has come back and convinced Netflix to give him this ostensibly chat show, but it is unlike any kind of chat show you would understand him to do before because it comes out only once a month, which is a very unusual kind of distribution model for what you would think of this big chat show that's going to have these big names attached. So it's going to be Barack Obama in the first one. The next one is George Clooney. Then it's Malala Yousafzai and Jay-Z, Tina Fey, Howard Stern.
Okay.
All these big names, definitely. But names, you could see him also potentially getting way back when he was doing his chat show, you know, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's an hour long, very pared back from what you would expect or what you know of his chat show styling in the sense that it's not this. If you ever watch the late night American chat shows, they are kind of a workhorse, right? They get in.
It's a format.
It is really a format.
It's formatted to death.
Completely.
Really.
So whoever the male comedians who present them are, they just bring in some guest who's either has something to flog, usually a movie or a new TV show, right? Or is in the running for the Oscar. they want to drum up a bit of support. And Saoirse Ronan comes out and she makes some jokes about her name and then they send her off on her merry way and someone else comes out. And it's very quick and they do these bits. And I suppose in the YouTube era, it's all been about creating this kind of bite-sized bit that can be then, sent all around the world. So it's completely pared back from that. It is kind of like watching a bit like, Parkinson back in the day where he would sit them down. It's this very intimate venue. The first one took place in the City College of New York or somewhere. So, and it's surrounded by this intimate audience. They're sitting.
And the audience don't know who's going to come out.
That's it as well. The audience don't know. At the very beginning, he asks, anyone want to guess? And seemingly nobody's able to guess. And it's just an hour-long chat, or at least that's what I thought it was going to be. And then about kind of 20 minutes into it, they pivoted to this sort of package in which David Letterman was in Selma, Alabama with Congressman John Lewis, who's a famous civil rights leader who had crossed the bridge on that day in 1965, which I think is another Bloody Sunday, one of the many Bloody Sundays. And it is a piece about sort of race relations in the US and sort of the current political climate. And I think the most interesting moment of it comes at the time where David Letterman looks to the congressman, who's this very famous civil rights leader who's won like the Congressional Medal of Honor and is really well known for playing this incredibly important role in the advancement of African-American rights in the US. And he looks at him and he says, the week that you kind of crossed the bridge in Alabama, a week later, I was taking a cruise ship to the Bahamas because it was legal to buy alcohol there and I was only 19. So why was I doing that and not really caring? Why did Alabama mean nothing to me then? Whereas, now having grown older and wiser and so on and so forth. So it is this package about racial affairs, I guess, in the US. And then it pivots back to Barack Obama and sort of talks about to him about the political climate, goes back to Selma and a bit more there. So it's an interesting kind of format. And I can see how well those kind of package can work with Barack Obama, because he is a politician, and yeah. and but I don't know what kind of package they're going to produce with
Howard Stern,
yes, or Tina Fey, or Malala. You know, like, what are you going to do? Malala, okay, you can see again a clear line to some sort of politics there, or current affairs, or some polemic issue. But Tina Fey, Howard Stern, where do you go, right? So it'll be intriguing to see how it goes. And as I said, it is only coming out once a month, so. It's interesting to see this kind of format and how much drawing power he has, certainly obviously for a US audience that grew up with him over the last 30 years. But for an international audience, I don't know. I mean, it's intriguing. I also kind of found it interesting watching him, because if you ever watch his interviews on YouTube from his late night shows, they're not really interesting interviews, right?
No, they're gags. They're setups for gags.
They're setups for gags and flogging your movie, right? They're short. I think the full segment with a guest will last about 5 minutes, which how much of any interest really do you get out of that? You get to see him as an interviewer here, a sort of more in-depth, conversational comedian, of course, that's what he is. So it's warm and funny and engaging, but it's more intriguing than what you might expect from him, because you don't think of him as a great interviewer. He's a comedian, first of all.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Well, that does sound more interesting. The tone of the interview, though, with Obama, is it continual soft soap? I haven't seen it. I did read about it. Apparently, they don't mention Trump once.
They don't, certainly not by name, anyway. I watched it and I kind of thought, watching this, look, Barack Obama is, of all, you know, I know him personally. No, Barack Obama, I don't, right? Like, I'm talking about him like as if I know anything about him beyond the pure, like, obvious, is he's this really professional politician, and he's never going to lay out any kind of dirt on Trump, which is really kind of what you want to hear.
No, but what I mean is, does Letterman press him on anything?
No, and he doesn't really press him either on any of the kind of more dubious aspects of his 8 years in the White House.
Yeah.
I would say he fawns on him a little bit. There's this ongoing joke where he's still pretending that Barack Obama is the president and saying, like, now when you go back to the White House, which is the commentary he's making on, you know, the current political climate.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get anything particularly revelatory about Obama in this interview, right? Beyond the fact that what life outside the White House is like, which really he doesn't tell you much about either. It's kind of about a bit about his family life, about sending his daughters off to college, making an IKEA lamp for 30 minutes, that kind of thing, right? It's not this great insight into, you know, this great political thinker that we that we're hoping for.
Yeah. Okay, so from then, that does sound more Letterman-y, except just longer. Anyway, but a couple of bits of TV news. Sharon Horgan, who of course is Flavor of the Year or years, signed a big deal.
Yeah, with Amazon Studios. So I would say, here's where you look out for that coming into any sort of realistic thing, because the Golden Globes loves Amazon Studios. They have given Amazon's comedies awards. They gave the wonderful Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I talked about a couple of weeks. That was Best Comedy and Best Actress. They gave Mozart in the Jungle, which I talked about probably about a year ago, Best Actor, Best Actress. So Amazon has signed a deal with Merman Productions, which is the production company that Sharon Horgan set up with a woman named Clelia Mountford, which sounds like a
great name.
Ever I heard one.
But Clelia is a real name. Fair City,
the combo of the very, it sounds like, you know, a Bond name or something. but they have set up this very successful production company that makes not just TV shows, but seemingly adverts as well.
Right.
And they've signed a deal with Amazon that gives Amazon first refusal of any new projects that Horgan herself is attached to or has written, as well as the rights to remake any of her previous shows as well for the US market. I think it's a 2-year deal, so, you know, big money.
Yeah, big money. And pretty much every week you come in to tell us about
I know,
a show's going to get a reboot. This week it's Watcho.
It's Sister Sister.
Oh my gosh.
Now, that will have limited appeal depending on your age, but as
no,
a child...
No, I remember Sister Sister, but only because my kids watched it.
As a child of the 90s, right, it is about Tia and Tamara. It's Parent Trap, kind of, with these two black sisters, twin girls, who are separated at birth and find each other in a department store. And one has a wacky adoptive mother named Lisa, and the other one has a straight-laced adoptive father named...
Dad.
Anyway, Ray Campbell, sorry.
Okay, well
and
done.
They all come back together and they live under the one roof, and it ran for 6 seasons. And what I couldn't believe was when I looked into it today, the cameos included Tim Allen, Kobe Bryant, Jerry Seinfeld, Ray Romano. So it obviously had some power way back.
Oh,
you know,
kid
when.
Shows are,
evidently.
Still, yeah.
So they're rebooting it. It was confirmed by Jackie Harris. I'm not sure how it's it's spelt in an ebonic way. And basically, she confirmed on a chat show that this reboot is happening. And I'll be back next week to tell you something else is being rebooted.
Indeed, right. And the original Tia and Tamara, I assume, aren't going to be in it.
Oh, they are. Yeah, yeah. It's getting.
Well, they still haven't
together.
Moved out. They're now like in their mid-40s.
I guess it'll be about, you know, getting confusing one for the other as an adult and what that means.
Oh, my God. Right. A couple more shows to talk about after this break.
You like to talk like this with a South London gangster ting, you know, and you advertised one of your shows once as tales of being brought up on a rough Croydon estate. Elliot, you were brought up in a semi-detached house 100 yards from South Norwood Lakes where they go yachting. I can only imagine those tales must have been, it was like ghetto blood, like when a man's got to walk a minute from his crib to go sailing and you get me?
That's Roast Battle UK. It runs weeknights at 10 p.m. on Comedy Central, and you can it's on demand as well. James, give us the concept for this.
Okay.
So I think we probably just got that in the clip.
Right. So the concept is that there's this famous American comedy thing called The Roast, where a celebrity in a good-natured way sits and gets a comedic pounding from a bunch of friends and stand-ups who come out and riff on them, tell embarrassing stories and hurl insults at them. And it's all this, it's all in, everyone's in on the joke. So the whole point is it's all really funny. And over the years, many people have been roasted, but of note, particularly of late, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump was roasted once before before. And Justin Bieber and people like that, and James Franco, I think, people like that have been roasted. Then this, in the US, this show was set up called Roast Battle, in which stand-up comedians roasted each other and came out and were judged as to who had the best roast. And now a UK version of it has been brought across the pond and it's on. And in it, you have Jimmy Carr ostensibly as host and we'll say head judge coming out and delivering some very risque comedy, because the whole point of this is like no safe spaces, no pulling of your punches. Anything is game in this kind of comedy. And there's like a proper trigger warning at the front of the episode and everything. And Jimmy Carr is one of the judges along with Catherine Ryan and Russell Brand. And two comedians come out. There's two lots of two. So one in the first half, two comedians come out and they roast each other. They each are given an opportunity to tell 5 jokes and the judges determine who wins. And then in the second half, the exact same thing happens. And then I'm sort of watching it, waiting for the two victors to come together for a roast off finale, and that doesn't happen, and it just ends with everybody standing on the stage a bit awkwardly. It's all just wrapped up very quickly. Now, what I think, right, it's sort of intriguing here, because I think a roast can obviously be very funny, right?
Mm.
But specificity is the soul of narrative, as the American comedian John Hodgman says all the time. And the thing about a
ooh, shark to you.
Right? The thing about a roast is it only works if you're in on the joke as well. And the more personal and particular the joke is, provided you get it, the better it is.
Or you care,
right? So here you have a load of comedians who I kind of vaguely recognize because they've appeared once or twice on a panel show or on a After Apprentice, You're Fired type job, or an Extra Slice of Bake Off, that kind of thing. We're talking about that kind of level
of comedian, right?
And I might recognize some of them by face, don't really know their names. They come out and they roast each other. But they're generally quite generic jokes. I mean, so in the first episode of the week, in the second round, it was this Asian comedian named Phil Wang versus a comedian named Ed Gamble. Gamble and Wang. I mean,
yeah.
Just,
wow. Write they should own, team up.
write yeah, your own jokes.
Crime fighting cops.
And so Ed Gamble's jokes were all Asian jokes. And Phil Wang's jokes, Ed Gamble had recently lost 6 stone, so his were all fat jokes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was nothing more layered or multi or, you know, or insightful to it than these very broad stereotypes, you know, pulled.
Because I suppose from the audience point of view, they don't know any of these people. So they're only able to, like, here's one biographical fact upon them when we're just going to riff on that.
Here's something I can see. That man is Asian. Therefore, let's tell some Asian jokes and they'll land. And I'm not saying they don't land. They can be very funny and shocking and provocative. But
and
that's
racist.
And racist. But as I said, this is a self-declared safe, you know, unsafe space, we'll say.
Okay.
So you are supposed to be able to get away with it. It's not that it's bad. Some of the jokes are funny, but once you hear a funny one, boy, do you get to hear it, because then they go to the judges and they're like, what was your favourite joke, Sean? And then you just tell it again.
No.
And you're like, okay, what was your favourite joke, Catherine? And she tells it again. And then at the end of it, what was your favourite joke of the night? And they tell it again. And you're like, yeah, heard it the first time, so I don't need it another time. So look, this is lightweight and silly and not appointment TV, right? Mm. If you're flicking through the channels, you probably would stop, because how often are you going to hear an Asian joke told on your TV, you know, completely in good faith and unashamedly?
Come here, love, there's a bit of racism on the telly. Quick, I'll pause it here. I must say, I never liked those. I've seen a few of the American roasts. I never liked them. I always get uncomfortable watching them. They just seem mean and they're not that funny.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just a difference in our comedic, like our sensibilities.
Maybe it is. I don't know. Yeah. And it's all a bit ladsy as well.
It's definitely a bit ladsy, 100%. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Third show we're going to be talking about today. First Dates Ireland is back on Tuesdays at 9:30 on RTE2. And of course, you can catch up in the RTE player. Here's a clip.
Ireland is, you know, a religion where I come from.
If you're a young lad, go to Ireland, age 10, you're loved by every man, woman and child in the parish. If you're no good, you're an orphan. And it's simple as that.
Deal breaker question, hurling or football?
Oh, see, that's difficult because I play football, but I have the highest respect for hurling.
When it comes to a point now?
I'll go with the hurling.
God.
There you go. That's First Dates Ireland. Of course, point, I suppose, is given, and you've made it before, about the instant comparison to the British version of the show, or what people will regard as the original version of
very
the show.
Very much. And I wear my heart on my sleeve as a First Dates super fan. I love it. I mean, I could literally watch 5 episodes of it in a row and I wouldn't get tired or bored of it.
Mm.
I love the UK one because I think it is like structured reality TV at its absolute best. It is perfectly cast. They pair them extremely well.
Yeah.
It is very charming. It is especially charming when they want to date each other. Got this like spark, right?
Yeah, it's actually anti in that sense, that because normally reality TV, you want something bad to happen.
And
but
you don't.
Here you don't.
Kind of want them. And I'm often, and I don't want to say Irish First Dates is bad. I don't think it's bad. I just don't think it's as good, right? And I think I've said before that the biggest problem I think I have with it is that I just don't find 19-year-old people interesting. And that is the majority of the daters on the show, because they have not as much life experience. And I think if you watch
the
British...
There's only 19 years. That backs up your assertion. Yeah.
And, you know, about 15 of them are the good years, right?
And they can't remember, until they're about 5.
So,
yeah.
So I understand it is probably to do with the people who are applying to the show.
Mm.
It's a smaller pool to draw from. And I accept all that, right? But again, you can't but compare them. Now, Tuesday's episode was actually, I think, perhaps the best Irish episode I have seen, because they had quite a good variety in the show. But it while rising to the challenge of providing the most interesting daters we've seen so far, it also again highlighted the big problem with this show, which is a kind of no sex please, we're Irish, right? Because at the end of the day, everyone's a bit bashful and shy at the end. And what you see a lot in the Irish one is, or more than you would see in the UK, is people not turning up for the date.
That's happened. That was really horrible.
That's happened a number of times.
Yeah.
And secondly, you get the face off at the end where somebody will go, okay, you go first. And that person goes, okay, yeah. And then that other person goes, no. Right? And this happens quite frequently.
Well,
in
that's the Irish are more, you know, were snakier.
They are.
Yeah.
Well, they're snakier.
Yeah.
And, but they're also, I don't know if we're like good at committing or something, yeah, or like taking a chance or something. And I will admit, I was watching it this week and they had this date between this Irish woman and a German man and it seemed to be going really well. And I was like, I was rooting for them, Tiffany. Like, it was like, come on and work, please, mm, please. And she was like, yeah, yeah. And he goes, no. And my heart like sank. And aww, it was really, really good. Theirs was a really good date that I wished had gone better. What I will say in its favour, and where I think it is vastly superior to the UK one, is the food looks so much tastier in the Irish one. I think the food looks like absolute slough in the UK one.
Okay, well, that's good. And in the UK one, they just seem to serve them the same blinking chips, thing with the, yeah, chocolate, and they pour it on. Yeah. Ah, come on.
Now, I don't, yeah, I'm not as enamoured with the restaurant staff in the Irish one as I am in the UK one. I think, right, in the UK one, they do these stupid bits where they've obviously been given a script and, yeah, they're trying to create this like backstory that I'm not buying. But when they're not doing that, I think the staff in the UK one are very charming and really good at their jobs. And Fred, maybe it's all scripted, you know, like his pieces to camera, I could care less about.
Yeah.
But his interactions with the diners at the beginning seem very earnest, yeah, and, yeah, and charming.
Yeah.
The Irish one seems completely driven by, here, say this, here's a sheet, read that out to him. And I'm not buying it. But look, first dates isn't on in the UK at the moment, so I go through a, you know, dry spell.
Okay,
this is the methadone to
yeah. What so I that's teach. Not bad then.
No,
that's not bad at all. Yes. Jim just gave a passionate rant about first dates, which is good, the original one. James Dempsey, thanks so much for coming in. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.